Drop of megalomania, touch of generosity, a dash of self-promotion.
All right, hello and welcome to episode number 9 of the At U2 podcast, talking all things U2, including new album news, tour dates, and community discussions from the staff of At U2 and guests, friends of the site. For this episode, we have got, once again, back from hiatus, Mr. Matt McGee. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm well, and we've also got Sherry on, last-minute recruit.
Hey, this is my penance for saying that we tied up Matt last week.
My ears were burning last Wednesday. Wow.
Well, and Matt may have been actually listening. I can't remember if you were listening at that point, but at some point you tuned in live. For those of you who aren't aware, we are actually streaming this live as we record it out to the internet at goodstuff.fm/live. There's a little chat room that we have going on, the old-fashioned IRC network thing. And so if... throughout the recording of the show, if we are stumped by something or maybe say something a little bit odd and someone might respond in the chat room, which is just text that we're reading as we're chatting, as we're doing the podcast, that's what's going on. And so you're welcome to tune in live. We record typically Wednesday nights at time zones, screw me up, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 Pacific,
yep,
8:30 in Saskatoon where I am. That's all I need to know. Sherry, I don't know, any other time zones we need to cover?
Not at the moment.
Whatever Dublin time zone is, in case Adam Bono want to tune in at some point, I guess. But
well, then that would be at about 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
The night is young for them.
Yeah.
They're just waking up.
We have somebody in the chat room actually from Dublin. Where are we? Mad Dog 738 says he's from Dublin, or she's from Dublin. And Midnight in Rio de Janeiro. So we got... the whole world is listening as we record. So you're welcome to tune in. If you follow the at U2 Twitter handle or Good Stuff FM Twitter handle, we'll tweet out when we go live. But like we said, typically Wednesday nights at those times that I said earlier. I think we need to just jump right in because we've got lots of stuff to cover for this episode. And so let's get right into the inbox. We have a ton of questions from folks, so which is awesome to be getting and keep sending them in. We said during the pre-show, we're going to probably do an episode here in the future where it's just all ask at U2 questions so we can get through the backlog to get to your questions because there's lots of good fun things, fun topics you guys are sending in. So we'll start it off here from the first one. Why did I do this to myself? At Obaduin? Obi, anyways, Streets is often the highlight of a U2 show. How is the U2 IE Tour version compared with previous tours? Is there room for improvement? And I picked this one first because I know Matt had some Streets issues that we've discussed in previous episodes. And how has it changed for you over the course of the tour?
You know, the song itself, I mean, the band's performance of it has been, you know, fantastic for me. And it's always been my favorite song. What I think that the issue for me and for some other folks that we've chatted with in the past has been is that it sort of doesn't have the buildup and the lead-in, or I should say on the North American tour, it didn't have the buildup and the lead-in that you sort of usually expect and get with it that you've had on past tours, like on Pop Mart tour when there was, you know, the Please segue into Streets, and on the Elevation tour, sometimes it was Bad going into Streets. And it's just this, you know, completely epic, you know, 10-minute segment of the show or 12-minute segment of the show, depending upon what it was. And on the first leg, it was just Streets came after, you know, there was 2 or 3 minutes of chat and then that slow Mother and Child reunion song, which, you know, I have to confess I've never been familiar with. So it just didn't have the whole, you know, the energy. And so that's what was lacking for me. But from what I've heard now on this European tour where it's Bullet the Blue Sky and then Zooropa and then into Streets and it's just this, you know, 15-minute medley kind of thing, it sounds phenomenal over the streams that I've heard. And just across the course of the tour, I think it's dramatically different, you know, just in those first couple shows that we've heard in Europe.
Yeah, I forget what you tweeted, Matt, that first show in Turin, when they did that segue. And I don't remember exactly what you tweeted, but basically...
I know what I tweeted.
Is it safe?
I think Matt's wife knows what he tweeted.
Yeah, I said, Bullet into Zooropa, into Streets, that's it, I'm going to Europe.
So that's, which I guess to answer the question, it has improved.
It certainly has, yes.
Sherry, how about for you?
Well, it's really interesting because I agree with Matt's take on streets for the first leg of Innocence and Experience. But, you know, not being in the venue to feel it firsthand, when I first heard it in on leg two in Turin, it lost the joy, you know, it lost the bounce, bounce, bounce factor because it was coming out of such heavy material from what they had presented from October into Bullet into Zeuropa and then into Streets that I was actually a little disillusioned by it all and quite depressed after the first night. And I actually had a hard time sleeping that night. But then listening to it play out again the second night in Turin, it took us the gal behind the Twitter handle K Now Wait, that's K_NOW_WAITE, where she wrote, "Bullet brings the anger, Zeuropa brings the despair, Streets brings the hope, Pride brings the we can do this." And that really helped me sort of work through the heaviness of what the band is now using Streets for within this new Heart of Darkness piece with the Innocence and Experience tour. So I still don't feel the whole bounce, 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 but it's certainly taken on a new personality. I don't think that it's any better or any worse. It's just different. So I think that Streets continues to be used very strategically across the tours. And I'll still state that my favorite version of Streets was from Popmark because it had all that additional drumming from Larry.
Because he's your favorite U2 member?
Oh, he's so dreamy. Yes.
Okay. Just thought I'd get that out there in case. For podcast trivia anyways, for someday. All right, next question is from Steve Doza, Steve_Doza. Is this current connection with fans, social media, meeting fans outside venues, going to continue beyond this tour? Any thoughts, guys?
I hope so.
Yeah, that's exactly what Steve said, hashtag hope so. Which, yeah, I think all of us would hope so. They've done, like, the meeting the fans outside the venue isn't new, right? That's fairly common from past tours. Or are they doing something different with that this year, or this tour?
I think what they're doing different is Larry's popping out a lot more often. Yeah, he was normally the most elusive one, and he's out there more often than Bono.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, I think some of it might be, I don't know, I think some of it might be the Guy Osiri influence, and I have no idea, but, you know, he's been... Didn't he talk early on somebody say something where he was, I mean, he sort of has a reputation as being, you know, a little more interested in the social aspect of things. Certainly, look, you know, I love Paul McGinnis, but nobody could be less interested in the socialist stuff than Paul McGinnis was. So the bar was set pretty low for Guy to jump over. But I wonder if his influence is part of this sort of, you know, the different stuff we've seen. Because it's not just the visiting with fans outside the venue before the show, but, you know, there was them coming to that event in New York City on July 29th that we're not allowed to mention. There was,
take a drink.
I don't recall that night at all.
there was, you know, them doing the podcast with the two Scots. I mean, they did the Song Exploder podcast too. I mean, they've done a handful of things that just, you know, I don't think they would have done on past tours.
Yeah, and so the at some point we've talked about this before, like their contract running out or whatever, and, you know, they go back to being an indie band of some sort. And then I guess we'll find out then if it's like their handlers are making them do this stuff or they actually genuinely have enjoyed it and want to keep doing it. Like, I mean, not to say they don't enjoy doing it, but just whether it's a thing they decide to keep doing. Because it seems like they legitimately seem to have fun with it and even getting into the act of taking pictures and posting them on Instagram, you know, scary steps into social media, but they're doing it. So it's awesome. Yeah. Okay. Next question. At Not Mason Merritt asked, Do you think people have the power and the fly will be replaced in their pre-show and intermission spots for Europe? I included this one just because, not to say, hey, Not Mason Merritt, you're wrong, because we know now, but just as a matter of discussion and including the question, because we know now, obviously, that is not the case, right?
Well, you know, they've I think for each of the shows so far, they've started with People Have the Power as the lead-in song, but I don't think that means that it's necessarily going to be that way every night. I think, you know, just from the interview that we did with Willie Williams, it sounds to me that they look at this as very much a malleable and a changeable production. And Willie, I mean, he even said that they have two more intermission videos that they plan to work in at some point. So we know that's going to be different eventually. But yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised if People Have the Power also gets, you know, replaced eventually by something. I don't know what.
Yeah. And I'll put a link to the At U2, that interview with Willie Williams that you had, that you post on atu2.com for folks who haven't seen it yet. There's some interesting little insights and peeks behind the curtain a little bit of the tour. So next question, Hick U2 asks, will Mercy ever be released? Any thoughts on other songs that we know about that you would like to see released? North Star is one that I would love for them to release.
Well, Mercy has been released, hasn't it? Wasn't it on the Wide Awake in Europe limited edition vinyl? That was something where the song took on a slightly different form from what was originally leaked. North Star, I believe, is still being tossed about for future recording, either for Songs of Experience or, should God forbid, one day Songs of Ascent actually show up, it might be on there too.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I've ever actually heard in North Star. Is it something that was teased or leaked audio wise, or just lyric and album, you know, or track listing somewhere?
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, they played it live, you know, probably four or five times, and you could go to tours.atu2.com/song/north-star and look that up really quickly if somebody wanted to. They played it a handful of times on the 360 tour, and then didn't it also make an appearance in, what was it, one of the Transformers movies?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's why I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
No offense, I love Transformers, but just didn't see the latest couple movies. All right. At Stibe asks, in Sweden, we hope that the Troubles won't be gone from the set list. We expect a live performance together with Lykkelia, which I'm guessing...
Lykkelia,
there you go.
Lykkelia.
Thanks. Is that a band?
No, that's the gal that sings. You really are struggling with your Twitter usernames, aren't you?
You should be like stumping me. I'm getting stumped just by the normal YouTube stuff going on.
It's like Chris sees an at in front of a name and just starts
my
to
brain
panic.
Shuts down.
Oh no! Oh no!
Right, of course, the vocalist who's on the song.
Right.
Who is also managed by Maverick.
Oh, interesting. So then there's even more. Likely.
And who is Swedish, as I understand. So that's why they are saying in Sweden. We hope. I don't know. I mean, I'd be cautious about using the phrase "we expect a live performance" together with Lykkelia. That, I mean, I don't know that I'd walk into the venue expecting it, but that would certainly be very cool. I think that would be something really cool for if it were to happen at any of the shows. You know, just something that. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see too. I love that song. I think that's a really cool song, and I feel very fortunate that I saw it twice, I think, at the shows I went to in North America.
Nice. You have to check tours.atu2.com to find out for sure.
Yeah, I do. It's on my fan profile on tours.atu2.com.
So. There you go. All right, last question. Fabio Nomad asks, why not use the Beth and Bono U2 tattoo project to have one of the At U2 members have a tattoo filmed for a future chat, which I'm pretty sure we started a Kickstarter campaign for Matt, didn't we? I thought we all agreed to do that. I'll have to find the link.
Amazingly enough, we still don't have any donations for that yet.
If we start with, anyways, the tattoo, we can start with the tattoo design. Maybe folks can send in, you know, submissions of what they think Matt should have tattooed. And we might let him choose where, but we'll start with...
Look.
I think it's the at symbol would be perfect.
Look, let's get something straight, okay? I love you guys, and I love you too, but my marriage will fall apart if I get a tattoo. So that is not happening.
Well, we can work your wife's name in there somewhere, like, you know.
No, we cannot work any names into any tattoo on my person.
Sherry, is this how you get fired? Is this how this works?
No. How you get fired is when I pick up the phone and call Carrie and say, "You love Bad Boys, right? Bad Boys have tattoos. Do you want Matt to be a bad boy?" That's how you get fired.
All right, so the tattoo project might be on hold. We'll take it offline and see if we can convince.
We have people on our staff already with tattoos who would probably love one
Jill.
More.
So
Jill has
tattoos. Jill would jump on that in a heartbeat.
Sure. So we got it. All right, we just signed Jill up. She's the lead on that project.
And we'll put
Aaron, add that to the staff weekly list. Right.
We'll put a link to the YouTube tattoo project again in case you haven't seen it. We talked to them on episode 7, I want to say, I think, a couple episodes back about that. And a great project and very cool project if you go check out the site and all the different tattoos that Matt won't be getting on his person. So that wraps up the inbox for this episode. But like I said, we've got lots. We are definitely have heard your questions. Of course, anything that's sort of related to like pre-European tour stuff that we didn't get to, we probably won't cover that because it doesn't make a lot of sense now to sort of pontificate about the what's going to happen in Europe, that kind of thing. But please feel free to keep sending in questions. Use the hashtag AskAtU2 and they are getting cataloged and we will do an episode and hopefully feature your question on a future episode. We appreciate all the questions that have been sent in, of course. All right, for the roundtable discussion, we thought, which is great that Sherry's able to join us. So it's a little more of a roundtable because instead of just Matt and I shouting at each other, we have the Ireland tour dates and plans was the big announcement. And then obviously we also want to talk about the review sort of the European tour opener. But the big news that I know, judging by the amount of emails going back and forth within the AtU2 staff with regards to the U2 announcement of, what did they say, bringing it home, U2's Innocence and Experience European Tour will finish with 6 home shows in Ireland, 2 shows in Belfast on the 18th and 19th of November, and 4 shows in Dublin on the 23rd and 24th, 27th, 28th of November. So, first of all, Sherry, have you bought your plane ticket already?
We were actually pricing out flights not too long ago. We have family in England, so we're going to do a little family visit over there, drop off the kids, and God willing, hightail it to Dublin. That's our dream anyway. We'll see if it becomes a reality within the next 96 hours.
And Matt, how about you?
I've actually got a hotel room booked. It's refundable, just in case, but, I have a blessing from my wife and family to go because it's over Thanksgiving and I don't have to get time off from work cause I'm already off then. So that works out conveniently. And, I'm looking at airfares. I may have looked at airfare 10 or 12 times today already.
And just so folks, maybe a little bit behind the scenes view that as the new guy on the AtU2 staff, the level of U2 fandom that maybe you've experienced in your life is sort of amped up to 11 when you go behind the scenes with the AtU2 staff. Because like before anything was even announced, people were buying hotel rooms and plane tickets.
Yeah,
if I'm not, maybe not
true.
Plane tickets, but definitely was close to that. And which is like, I'm not saying that. I think we can safely say that here and people would be in admiration, not in mocking that idea.
The planning started about 2 weeks or so ago, right? When the rumors started to fly, that's when our internal staff list, people are like, well, should we just start booking hotel rooms now? Well, yes, you know, book hotel rooms now and make sure it's refundable and, you know, guess at the dates. So yeah, that's funny you should mention that, Chris, because I would love to hear like what it's like for new people joining the staff. That's interesting that you made that comment.
Well, like I said, I tweeted this after the fact, but like one of the first things that happened after I joined was the U2 party, or that U2 party that we're not going to mention, and was like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. I could have gone to that. And then realizing that if I had gone, I would have seen Edge and Adam up close with 400 other sweaty U2 fans. And yeah, that was like my introduction to being. So the bar has been set pretty high for whatever happens next. But no, I won't hold you to that exactly. But yeah, it's I think for me, meeting, just a little bit of a personal thing, it's awesome to be able to meet and chat with U2 fans. And that's why I've loved doing this podcast so much, both chatting with the folks from at U2 on the show, but then also getting to meet so many of the fans through Twitter and stuff, and following and chatting on Twitter. It's kind of like I knew they were out there, but I just never really sought them out before, and kind of felt somewhat isolated in my U2 fandom. I'm the U2 fan nerd in my family and friends or whatever, like I'm sure most of you are.
That's yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so it's kind of just fun to stumble into this little family. So yep. I'm very welcoming.
Amen.
But that's one of the intriguing things about this particular set of dates in Ireland, because the whole show, at the heart of it, it's their hometown, you know?
Yeah.
So even for me, this is, and I've said it across many other platforms, across our site and elsewhere, this is my bucket list. This is my Hajj, so to speak. And so for 27 years, I've been a fan. I've never seen them in Ireland. Last time I was in Dublin, we did the driving tour around Cedarwood Road. We went up to Howth. We did Northside. We did the whole walk around Dandelion Market area, all of that other stuff. And the only other time that I had, that was in 2004. The only other time that I was in Ireland was in 1999. And my husband had proposed to me on Grafton Street. And
so just, what a sweetheart.
just before that, we were walking through St. Stephen's Green, and this was right around Valentine's Day, and that was my Bono sighting. I saw him leave the mall area with his entourage of Gavin and Googie. He crossed the street, and it looked like either the scene out of The Fly video where he's just crossing and nobody's doing anything, or it could also look like St. Patrick chasing the snakes out, because the line behind him, everybody was freaking following him. And I felt bad for him. I'm like, he can't even get his wife a Valentine's Day card without having half of Dublin freaking following him. So anyway, so we went back to the place where we were staying. And at that point, the band, they were filming it wasn't the band filming, but Million Dollar Hotel was being filmed, and all over the internet, people were playing the "Where's Bono" game. Isn't he in LA at the production? And people assumed he was in the States. So I log on. I'm like, "Hi everybody, I'm in Dublin. Just saw Bono. Got engaged. Got to go," because back then you had to pay through the nose for internet. And so the responses I got was, "Oh, you're in Dublin. Oh, you saw Bono. Hey, wait a minute. You just said you got engaged." So between that and my family's Irish roots, I've got a connection there. But for me, getting to be in that atmosphere is second only to seeing U2 in Boston on St. Patrick's Day in 92. It is going to be one of those types of energy zones where if you are a U2 fan and you need to feel that energy, the whole city is just going to be thriving. And so from what I've heard and what I've read from when they've done Slane and they've done Croak and they've done all those other areas. Now, granted, you're talking tens of thousands, if not over 100,000 people for that. These shows are so tiny. You know, you're going to have, what, at most 11,000 people in 3 Arena on any given night. this is going back to 89, and which was the last time that they had played an arena in Ireland. So the specialness and everything surrounding it, it's just going to be one of those moments where you've got to live it. So I'm throwing caution to the wind. I don't care. I'm going, ticket or not, I'm going.
Nice. That would actually be a good segment we'll have to do for the show at some point is, you know, your Bono or Edge or Adam or Larry sighting outside of maybe the concert venue, but some sort of other story like that that everybody maybe has in some form. We actually have a connection then, Sherry, because I was engaged in Ireland as well. So in Wicklow, Ooh. But not in Dublin. But so there you go. We have a shared history a couple years before you. But other than that, we're... Something about getting engaged there, I guess. And you two fans. All right. I lost my doc. There we go. I just wanted to mention someone in the chat room while we were chatting asked, I think they had submitted a question about favorite U2 spots in Dublin to visit before the concerts. We'll definitely get to that question. And we just didn't have time to prep for that for this episode, but we'll do that. If you have favorite spots you want to recommend for fans who are going, send them in on the Ask at U2 hashtag and we'll cover that on a future episode, definitely before the concert and give you plenty of time to prep for it. Matt, any comments on ordering tickets and stuff like that? It feels like this is kind of like a unique thing and it's an extra stop on the tour that fans should know about, and especially if they're subscribers of U2.com, what they should be looking for and doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my head around how it's going to work and all that sort of stuff. And right now, the place to go is U2.com/help. Which is where they've posted some frequently asked questions about the shows, and that was updated a couple hours ago, as far as I understand. And Ticketmaster also published a frequently asked questions with extra information. And so it just, I think it's, I mean, it's going to be, I mean, as Sherry was just saying, it's, you know, usually when they play Ireland, they do stadiums, you know, 80,000 people per show, and they do three or four shows. And they sell out, so 250,000 people. And here they're doing, you know, four in Dublin, two in Belfast, and very small venues. This is going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of sad fans on Thursday and Friday trying the pre-sale, and then Monday during the public sale. I'm kind of in the same boat that Sherry is. I'm thinking if I go, I may not have a ticket with me at that point, but I'm a big believer that, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And I've never once not been able to get a ticket to go to a show that I needed to see. So I think I'm afraid for what's going to happen over these next 5 or 6 days, just because it's going to be such a high demand ticket. And I'm not confident that Ticketmaster's website's going to survive. There's no app this time, as far as I understand. I don't, like the Ticketmaster app that I have on my phone is just for North American Ticketmaster, from what I understand. I don't think that's going to work for Ticketmaster.ie. It's a separate entity. So, yeah, it's going to be, wow, is it going to be a tough ticket to get? And, it's going to be an adventure. But you know what? At the same time, as one of our, I think Aaron Govern or maybe Donald on our staff list said today, as tough as this ticket's going to be, let's keep in mind that in 1989, you had to get in line 4 days in advance and stay outside the venue 4 days in advance if you wanted a shot at one of those Point Depot tickets. So I'm not going to complain if I'm sitting here in my house,
right?
You know, in a nice, comfortable 72-degree room, tapping away at my computer. I might bang the desk a couple times. There might be a four-letter word here or there, but that's going to be it. I'm just going to remind myself, you know what? Thank God it's not the Point Depot in 1989, and I don't have to wait outside for a week. So
that, to me, you bring up like talking Dublin stuff, that to me is still the concert that I listen to so many times over and over and over, and is like ingrained in my brain of like sort of the fandom or the excitement over U2 in Ireland in their hometown. And I'm sure there's other concerts too that are great as well, but that one's just for whatever reason. I think I got it off a bootleg somewhere at some point and hard to get back in the day before the internet was what it is.
Yeah. Those were great. Those are great shows. And two things. Well, number one, just real quick in the chat, Mad Dog 738 just said there is a Ticketmaster Ireland app. So that's awesome. So I think we all need to go download that pronto.
Do it before. And then, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sooner the better. Set up an account, the whole nine yards. And then two, just to piggyback on what you were just saying, Chris, and what Sherry said earlier, it absolutely is. It's not just U2 playing Ireland, but it's U2 playing Ireland indoors and in a very tiny venue. And it's, I have to think it's the last chance we're ever going to have to experience that, because it, you know, the next tour, every time, you know, it makes more sense in Ireland for them to play stadiums. And especially when they get to the point where they're doing like a final tour, God forbid, or a goodbye tour, you know, that's going to be a stadium show. It's not going to be in a tiny little thing. So that's my attitude towards this too, is that this is probably the last time I'm going to ever get a chance to see, you know, U2 in Ireland in a small venue. And I did see them in Ireland on the Pop Mart tour, and it was a religious experience. It was incredibly emotional to be there in that stadium and hear those songs and know that those songs were formed, you know, just a mile or two up the road at the studio, or they were written over here about this, you know, about this thing. And it was just to put all that together and be in that city was just, it was just, like I said, it was incredibly emotional throughout the whole show. And so everybody that's remotely thinking about going to these shows, look, I know I'm making it harder to get tickets, but if you're remotely thinking about going to these shows, you really should, you know, give it your all, because it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's that special.
It should be noted that Hot Press a few hours ago put up a article saying Ticketmaster issues rules of engagement for U2 Dublin and Belfast fans, okay? The statement says that no cash will be accepted, as transaction is a paperless one, debit and credit card payments only. All general admission standing tickets for these events are paperless, and the credit card used to make the purchase must be presented on the show night to gain entry. There will be no tickets available from Ticketmaster outlets or call center. Tickets will be limited to two per purchase. Queuing at the box offices at 3 Arena will not be allowed before 6 p.m. on Sunday, September 13th. So for more information, fans are asked to check ticketmaster.ie/U2FAQ. So then you bounce over to U2.com, where it says, if you've already purchased two tickets with a pre-sale code for earlier U2IE tour shows, you are not eligible for the pre-sale. So it's, you know, if you've got a lottery ticket, this is going, you're probably going to end up winning Powerball more often than getting a U2 ticket.
And I just want to, for the record, just weigh in with a quick opinion too, that I think the way they are going about this is absolutely the right way to do it. I mean,
I agree.
We got an email sent to the news at U2 address today from a fan. Might be somebody that's listening now, who knows. But this person was very upset that, as someone who just subscribed to U2.com within the last day or so, that he is not going to be eligible for the presale, and he didn't think that was fair and all this sort of stuff. And I just, they're in such a difficult position with having only, you know, these four shows, these six shows, and such incredible demand, and all the different ways they could go about, you know, figuring out who is eligible for the pre-sales and all this stuff. I just think it's completely fair that the Irish fans get it for 24 hours or so on the first day, then the rest of us get a chance at the pre-sale, and then the public sale starts Monday. I think, you know, I just, you know, thumbs up to the way it's gone about. Not everybody's going to be happy, but it would be impossible for them to make everybody happy with this.
Yeah, short of doing like a, what, 15, 20-night stand of concerts or something.
Right. Exactly.
That's the only way. And by then, I mean, yeah, you're dealing with exhausted band members and crew. But, and that's where I think people often forget, and I forget this too, like that, like I was saying earlier about finding the U2 fans online. And you, everybody, I think, you sort of think like U2 is my band, and not that you own them in any way, but that where they, I think in the band's mind, they are an Irish band still, and that's their hometown, that's their home country, and that's who they're going to be living with when they're not a band anymore. And
right, exactly.
You know, it is still, that's special as it is being in New York, as in Boston, as in if they ever came to Saskatoon, Dublin is their home. And that's, yeah, I think you got to sort of respect that. But it is an important note, like as far as becoming a YouTube member, YouTube.com member, in the hopes of getting pre-sale tickets and stuff like that, that they do have that sort of whatever, what's the word I'm looking for? Holdover where you can't buy tickets on that right away. Does anybody know what the sort of grace period is for that or how that works?
Well, typically, if a major tour announcement is about to happen, they will usually do what they did this time in order to limit the amount of scalpers who will come in and buy like 20, 30, 50 memberships just to gain access to the pre-sales. What they've done in the past is they've limited calendar period for that as well. In this particular case, what I find to be very, very much interesting is that the people who still have an account in good standing, but who did not use their pre-sale code. So if you bought a membership 3 days ago and you were issued a pre-sale code, you can use it. But then again, all pre-sale codes were removed. Matt, when was it? About a month and a half ago? 2 months ago? So,
yeah, it was a couple months ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when that happened, I believe that anybody who would have joined in that time period probably won't be issued one. There is always a little asterisk in the fine print on U2.com's about page where it says about the pre-sales and that it's not always a guarantee. So you have to take that into account. Just because they offer them doesn't mean that they always offer them or they have to offer them. They have a little get out of jail free clause in there.
Yeah, exactly. But it is, and again, like Matt said, I think it's there's so many people who they'd have to try and please. I think they're doing the best way possible that they can. And we'll see what happens. And
so, what I'm really surprised about is that the whole venue isn't a ticketless system. That is the one thing that I'm really surprised about, because the amount of scalping is going to be astronomical for people who have physical tickets, and the risk of buying a fake ticket is going to jump exponentially for these shows. You thought it was insane in New York. I'm really surprised that they're not doing ticketless completely for the Ireland venues.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, we'll see back, I guess, next episodes. We'll have, right by then, we should know for a lot of folks as far as whether they're getting a ticket on the pre-sale and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would think so. Okay. I mean, it's going to...
There might be a few tears.
That's right. We'll come and drown our sorrows next week on the podcast.
Yeah. There's something about, I was just going to mention, I don't know if this is going too deep, too nerdy or whatever on this, but like talking about codes being loaded and codes on YouTube.com that people are talking about and going back and forth on. Is that something worth mentioning for fans and what sort of that means?
Yeah, there's if you're not a member of the band's website, when you join, typically they if it's during a tour cycle, they will issue out it's a randomly generated code, and it's normally like 16, 18, 20 digits. It's a whole mess of letters and numbers and all that stuff. And so that code is has some programming behind it, so that the Ticketmaster folks know that that's eligible for a total of two tickets, or a total of four tickets, or one ticket here and one ticket there. So whatever the rules are behind that particular ticket sale, that gets linked to that particular code. Once that code is used, it cannot be reused, and their system can identify that.
Right.
So it's also something where on this tour, and I wrote about it extensively back in November and December of 2014 on @U2, about how the pre-sales worked, in that if you lived in a house like I do, where my husband's a U2 fan, I'm a U2 fan, I have a U2.com membership, he has a U2.com membership, we both got a pre-sale code. Because we're happily married, we both have a joint account where my credit card number is the same credit card number he has. My address is the same number, is the same address he has. And so if I were to buy tickets with my pre-sale code, and I use our credit card, I use my mailing address, and I get my tickets, great. He goes into a different show, or it could be the same show if he wants to bring along our kids, because we have two, and gets two tickets. What happened on this tour was one of those ticket orders got canceled automatically by Ticketmaster, because it claimed that it was either a duplicate order or that you weren't adhering to the rules of the pre-sale, because you were only allowed a total of two tickets with that pre-sale code to the address with the credit card number that you had used. So that's when fans started realizing, oh crap, the tickets I thought I had, I don't. And now I don't have my pre-sale code because they've rescinded it. So the best advice that we were given was, use a different credit card. Use a different mailing address. Don't be married to a U2 fan, you know. So you know, those were some of the things that I wrote about. And if you go onto U2.com in their Zootopia area, there's a whole slew of stuff there. So, you know, for the limited number of people who still have active pre-sale codes who this may impact, if you have a spouse who lives with you, do not use the same credit card for your tickets, because you could run the risk of having your ticket order canceled. Use a different credit card if you happen to be in that situation, then you should be all set.
So maybe find another spouse is what you're saying, right?
Ask said spouse to move out for about a week or so, change the address, and then let him move back in after the concert. Sure. Right.
So yeah, at some point this week, later this week, Friday-ish, people will be finding out Thursday, Friday of what's going on. And to quote Christopher, fellow at U2 staff, might hear some,
oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
From Chris and others as they find out that they got tickets, or I don't have a sound effect for tears.
It's really rude.
Folks who don't get a ticket. Anyways, moving on. the one thing, other thing we want to talk about this episode is maybe a quick recap of the European tour opener and our thoughts sort of on that. We touched a bit on Streets and it being changed a bit and that whole segment. But any other thoughts as you've sort of listened to the streams, anyways? It's been awesome, all the streams that have been popping up, Mixler and Periscopes and stuff that have been popping up. And if you're following the @U2 Twitter account, you'll get notified of anything that we find as the show happens or before the show even happens of shows. And I for one, I didn't really tune in live to a lot of the live streams for some reason. I mean, maybe it was just timing of the other shows in North America, but it's been actually good. Like, I'm working and I just can just tune into a live stream and while I'm making lunch or working or whatever and listen along. So, Matt, how about you? Any thoughts on how the tour has sort of changed or what your thoughts are on the tour opening in Europe?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this, I think we did cover a bit of it earlier with the talk about Streets and how it segues in from Bullet to Zooropa and that sort of stuff. The thing that stands out for me is that what Sherry said earlier is that it's just very, very heavy. This show is, it seems, even listening over the internet, they are really, really on message and hitting that message hard throughout the show. Lyrics are being changed, video screen, the speeches, the changes in Bullet. It's a heavy show. And I want to get a chance to experience it. So I think it's a heavier show than what we had in North America. It wasn't, you know, North America was seemed like a mix of a celebration with some of the heavy stuff. But this just seems, for me, and I could be wrong. You know, I'm not in the room, so in the room it may have been a different feeling. It just feels very heavy to me.
Now, how about you, Sherry?
Yeah, there's an urgency and an immediacy about the message that they are bringing, and I think that this is the combination of the world events, them being it's literally ground zero in all these countries that they're going into. These governments are having to make major decisions about what's going on with the refugee crisis on almost an hourly basis. So for them, it's interesting because we were hypothesizing a week ago, are they going to talk about the Greek economy? Are we going to be looking at this type of thing? And it was almost like, even though the refugee crisis hasn't really been an overnight thing, but it suddenly became world news. It suddenly became very personal when that young little boy was discovered on the beach, you know, where after drowning with his family. There was a bit of urgency that suddenly we need to do something, and we need to do something now. And why isn't this getting the type of attention? I remember saying to somebody after night one that it almost felt like Bill Carter was calling in from Sarajevo again. It kind of had that feeling, you know, where you were just stopped in your tracks. I wasn't expecting Zuropa, for example, to be a cry of desperation. You know, it's such a great song, a great fun kind of poppy electro song, and the way that they've transformed it, it's a desperation moment where you know, what do you want? I want a home. I'm not dangerous. I'm in danger. Help me. Why isn't anybody helping me? And that's something where if I'm going to a rock concert, I kind of want to forget about life for a while. And these guys are taking it to the next level to get people to realize we need to change our perspective. We need to show humanity. We need to show mercy and grace and be welcoming. And if there really is, there are very few people who can garner the attention, both in the media and in the minds and hearts of large groups, in the way that you two can. There are very few musicians out there and very few artists who can basically slap the world in the face and say, wake up. So they are taking their position very seriously. And with them also being European, I think that adds additional weight. When the band is in the States, you've always got the naysayers saying, yeah, but you ain't from here. You're not American. Shut up. You know, what right do you have to tell us what to do, Mr. Bono? You know, so you've got that type of mentality. But in Europe, hey, they're part of the union. And so they have every right to get up on that soapbox just like everybody else. And they are using it to the fullest extent that they can. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing what they're doing, but it certainly takes the air out of the room, and it's a sobering moment.
Yeah, I'm reminded of, Matt, do you remember the name of Bill Flanagan's book, the title? This is the we stumped ourselves in episode 2, I think, of the podcast. But
You two at the end of the world.
There you go. I had it queued up.
Winner. Just,
yeah.
Winner.
But it reminds me, I think in that book, that there was a discussion about like during of that Zoo TV era, Zooropa tour, where they, you know, like the segue of bringing Bill Carter in, and it's like depressing people, but we're also supposed to be at a rock show. And how do you balance that? And that's it seems like, again, we're not in the room, but it seems like from afar anyways, it seems like they're doing a good job of balancing a bit of like, you're going to get to have the fun party of being a U2 show, but we're going to also leave you with a bit of like maybe some nagging thoughts that after a few days are going to be ringing around your head that hopefully you take home and maybe take action on or do something about with. So yeah, exciting to see, interesting to see, I guess, how this all continues to play out, of course. So I think that's good for the roundtable. We want to get to a few of the Stump Matt questions before we end the show.
I think we're out of time, actually, Chris, so we'll be wrapping up now. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on the At YouTube podcast.
Some of these...
Did that not work?
No, it didn't work. We're still going. Sorry, Matt. But I should have...
How come you're the only one with access to the record and stop button? What is going on here?
I don't know. But... Anyways, okay, a couple questions for the Stump Matt. I was going to say Stump at U2, but I think the combined brain power of At U2 staff would have no problem with these, but we'll single out Matt for this one.
Yeah, why? What did I do to deserve this?
Oh, you started a website. I don't know.
I know.
Ross the Bear. The first one came in from Bibbit Electric. Easy question for Matt. She says, what was the name of the official currency of Zoo TV? And the answer is apparently in Matt's book. So
yeah, Zoo Ecu or however you pronounce it. Right.
Yeah.
Zoo ECU or something like that.
Right. That'll be my right answer and wrong answer. Get Bono as the bell.
I think I have a few of them over on my bookcase shelf somewhere.
Do you? Oh, neat.
I think I do.
There you go.
I wonder if we can use them to buy merchandise on the tour.
Someone should try that just to see. I mean, you know,
obviously. And live stream it. Yeah. Somebody should do that. Periscope it and just go up to the thing and just bring up the Zoo EQ and try to buy something. That would be classic.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I don't need a laminate. I'm with the band.
Anyways, okay. Now we're getting into the Sherry segment of Stump Matt. I didn't grab all the Sherry's.
Did I do it live?
Do you remember which one? I picked a few. You can.
Oh, I've got them.
Okay.
So Matt, is Edge really bald?
Yes.
Can you name all the members of U2 in order of oldest to youngest?
Adam, Bono, Edge, Larry.
Good job.
Pint.
In what documentary does Bono talk about new boots and panties?
In what documentary doesn't he talk about that?
No.
Wow, that sounds like Outside It's America.
Oh, darn. Good job.
Pint.
Okay, so who dies at the end of the All I Want Is You video?
Nobody. I don't know. No, that question has never been answered.
Trick question, isn't it?
It is a trick question.
Pint.
We'll give you that one.
Ah, darn. Who were the two football teams in the Stuck in a Moment video?
Ooh, that is a good one. They were the... I can totally picture that scoreboard. It was one of them called the Flies?
Gary?
I don't know. Was it?
So I'm asking you, is that right? The Flies? Yeah.
She's looking for both answers before she gives away the...
Oh, well, whatever.
It's really rude.
I think one of them was the Flies and the other was the Lemons?
Are you sure you want to go with that answer?
Yes, I'll go with that answer.
Pint!
Pint.
Get out of here, really?
Next time we'll have, do you want to call a friend or is it?
It's like talking to Regis.
Okay, this is one. Was that the end of your list, Sherry? That's
that's all I have right now. But I know that my husband submitted one.
Oh, is that, I don't know who you're, at Mark Peterborough? No.
That would be at Caleb U2.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I was going to say that one for last. Mark Peterborough asks, name all the vocalists that Edge has publicly performed Where the Streets Have No Name with. And I have no idea. This came in late, so I have no idea even what the answer would be to this exactly.
Name all the vocalists that Edge has done Streets with?
Yeah.
Bono. The guy, Matt Bellamy from Muse. and Tony from Unforgettable Fire.
Ooh. Did he do it with, they didn't do it with Chris Martin, did they? Like the New York
Did they? No, it wasn't with him. It was with Springsteen.
Oh, right.
Did they do Streets at that you're talking about the thing in Times Square, right?
Yeah, Springsteen. That was Springsteen's first tune with them.
So they did Streets and then Still Haven't Found with Springsteen.
Right.
Karen in the chat room says she's got her pom poms out for you, Matt, cheering you on. So, but
oops.
Well, you got an oops on that one because
I got 3 out of 4.
Yeah, but we're looking for 100%. We can't accept anything less than perfect.
Chris, you're obviously not familiar with the public school system in America where 100% is not required to pass.
Yeah, I know. I'm familiar. My kids are in school now. They definitely don't require, they cannot fail you. So, anyways, we won't get into that discussion before I'm sure there's one last question, then we'll get to Sherry. Well, I don't know how we'll do Sherry's husband's question, but Vivid Electric had a second one that I thought was kind of neat. After the 360 tour ended, end party, a crew member took a cab, paid with U2 fake money, and got $2 of change. In what city did that happen?
Oh, I never heard that story. Is that for real?
I don't know. I'm taking her account for, I guess, truth, because nobody would lie on the internet, especially on Twitter. So...
no, that's a, I have no idea at all. I'd never heard that story.
Oh shoot. shouldn't have closed my soundboard.
Oops.
She says it was Montreal where it happened, where it went down. So I don't know how,
okay.
Maybe it was a commonly known story within the Montreal media or something that didn't make it bigger. But so I'd be curious if there's some follow-up linkage or whatever to an article or something that you can send in, that'd be awesome. She just tweeted me actually saying, yes, it's true. So, but, all right. So Caleb U2's question, which I think we'll just have to maybe leave with Matt for homework. I'm not sure, but.
Oh my God. Okay. Here we go. I don't get to ask you guys any questions.
No. It's a Stump Matt U2 question. It's not Stump Chris or Sherry questions. Why would we do that? Okay. So this is how we'll end
34, Matt. 34. Anyway, go on.
U2 has a concert that starts in 17 minutes, and they must all cross a bridge to get there. All four men begin on the same side of the bridge. You must help them across to the other side. It is night. There is one flashlight. A maximum of 2 people can cross at one time. Any party who crosses, either 1 or 2 people, must have the flashlight with them. Light bulb, not flashlight. The light bulb must be walked back and forth. It cannot be thrown, etc. Each band member walks at a different speed. A pair must walk together at the rate of the slower man's pace. Bono takes 1 minute to cross. Edge takes 2 minutes to cross. Adam takes 5 minutes to cross. Larry takes 10 minutes to cross because Sherry keeps trying to get his autograph. For example, if Bono and Larry walk across first, 10 minutes have elapsed when they get to the other side of the bridge. If Larry then returns with a flashlight, a total of 20 minutes have passed and you have failed the mission. Your goal is to get all the men across in 17 minutes or less.
All right, two things. Number one, Sherry's husband Steve was just added to our staff list. I am removing him immediately.
Fired just like that.
Post haste. Number two, Bono and Edge walk across first. That brings the total to 2 minutes. Bono walks the flashlight back. That brings it to 3 minutes. Adam and Larry walk across. So now it's 13 minutes. Edge walks the flashlight back. So now we're up to 15 minutes. And then Edge and Bono walk across, bringing the answer to 17 minutes. End of podcast. Drops the mic.
Pint.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Bam, we need like some sort of theme music now.
I know, we need something there. That's
ladies and gentlemen, what can I say about these august men, these titans?
I won't use that one. Well done. Well, did you?
Thank you.
You didn't cheat on the doc, did you?
No, on the doc, no, okay. Not at all.
That's actually circulated for as long as At U2 has been around.
Okay.
So I'm surprised he remembers that.
I saw that teaser thing. I remember that on Wire from the mid 90s.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. See, I'm not even, that's how hardcore the U2 staff is. I wasn't aware of the history behind this question.
All right. So awesome. My trivia question is this.
Uh-oh.
Tenterhook was the original name of what 1990s song that U2 worked on?
Enter Hook. Sherry, I'm 1990s song.
What, a 1990s song? I am not familiar with that.
Do I have to answer that again?
Yep. So 1990s, Tinderhook. I'm going to say Numb.
That's a good guess. Yeah, it was some obscure song on Zeuropa or something that was... I'll go with, just for the sake of something, Until the End of the World.
No, no. Play your sound effect for no, you're wrong.
Oops. Oops.
Double oops.
Okay, so everyone, when you're listening to this, go to @u2.com/news, which is our news page. That's where the little search box is there.
Oh, this is like a link bait art question. You're just trying to get more traffic to your website.
There's a little search box there. Type the word Tenterhook in and click the search button. You'll get 7 results. Scroll down to the July 1st, 1996 entry from Eno's Dear Diary in Propaganda, and you will learn that Tenterhook was the original name of Miss Sarajevo, of all things. Now, isn't that great information that you are going to sleep so well tonight knowing?
You know what, Matt? I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight, actually.
Oh, gosh. No, no.
That's awesome. And that is a good demo of the news and history and archives that are on at U2.com, which I'm sure has probably more history about the band than U2.com does in terms of...
I will never forget that factoid again. Mark my words.
There we go. So in episode 200 of this podcast, we'll put it to Sherry and see if she still remembers that fact. All right. Well, I think that brings us around about to the end of this podcast. Any final things we need to mention? The next concert is coming up on the 12th, I believe. Am I right?
Saturday, I think.
Saturday.
Yeah. So watch the @u2 handle for live streams of some sorts. I'm sure somebody will be doing something. Okay, you can follow the Twitter account for @u2, @u2 on Twitter, of course. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/@u2com. The podcast you can find at goodstuff.fm/@u2. Previous episodes are all there. If you just put the episode number after this is /9 for this episode. So any links and things we discussed, there's actually a late breaking news. There's a Ticketmaster app for Ireland, a link in the show notes. We'll put that in there. If you want to try, you have to set up an Ireland store account and stuff and et cetera, but you can try your best to get that. And all the other stuff we talked about will be linked from on that page. And anything else? Oh, the #AskAtU2 is where you can submit questions, comments, future Stump Matt questions if you want, and actually future topic ideas too. If there's things you're like, hey, why don't they talk about blah, whatever that might be, throw it on that hashtag. That's sort of a universal way of sending in things to the show, and we'll pick it up and grab it and listen to it or talk about it and stuff on a future episode. Any final closing words, Matt and Sherry?
I was just going to say good luck to everyone that is trying for tickets for Ireland. That's all I want to close with.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say as well. Best of luck, and don't feel so bad. About 1.5 million others are in the same boat you are.
Yeah, exactly. And some of us won't even be going. So there's always those of us who will just be at home celebrating with a pint of Guinness as we listen along to Matt's live stream, hopefully from inside the concert venue, but maybe outside the venue.
I'm glad you're optimistic for me. It may end up being Sherry's live stream, though.
Somebody's live stream. We'll be there. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week. Remember, you can tune in live, like we said. Should be Wednesday nights around 10:30 Eastern, but follow the @u2 Twitter account to find out when and where you can tune in live. And that's it for now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
That's a real Zoo TV moment.